We are all here tonight because we're married to a preacher or to a member of the official board of our local church. And I think that's very special, and I want to thank each of you. I want to add to what my husband has already said. We thank each of you for taking time out of your busy schedules to come out on a Thursday night for these meetings. We do feel like it. They are very, very important. We have times that we are with the ministers, but when my husband was elected a superintendent 5 years ago, it was his dream that he could get these meetings established because he wanted to know you and he wanted to know your husbands. He feels very keenly that every church in our district is very important. And he knows that the success of those churches really is in our hands, all of our hands. And if we can learn something in these sessions that will help us in the position that we're in and do a better job in the local church, then it's been well worth it, hasn't it, to come out on a night like this. Rather than just speak specifically to a deacon's wife or a minister's wife, I'm going to take some scriptures tonight from a chapter in the Bible that's very familiar to all of you, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and speak to you on love, because I feel like if we have the love of God in our heart and it's just bubbling up in there and we're totally committed to the Lord, then it's going to be much easier to perform in the capacity that you were in. I will not speak on love relationship between husband and wife, but I had just two or three quotes that I thought I'd give you before I get started that I think are very good. Love can be defined as acting in the highest interest of the person being loved. Now, that doesn't have to be just your husband. That could be your child or your best friend in the church. Love can be defined as acting in the highest interest of the person being loved. Love means giving. It means sharing, disciplining, guiding, and sometimes withholding. And then another quote that I had, there is love evident when you're more concerned about what you can do for others than what others are doing for you. You see, if it gets reversed, then it isn't love, it's selfishness. Richard Foth, who's president of Bethany Bible College in California, gave this definition of love. He said, it's the accurate estimate and the adequate supplying of another's needs. See, ladies, if we can accurately estimate what that other person, what their needs are, if we know them well enough that we know their needs, and then we can supply that need, then we are truly showing love to that person. And there are so many people in our churches today that we need to get close enough to that we know their needs. A lot of them will never express them. They're not going to stand in testimony service and tell us. But somehow God can help us get close enough to that person that we do know their needs. When Brother Mason was talking about how wonderful it was that God put the man and the woman together, I was just reminded. I was listening to a tape on my way down here tonight. I drive for James, and he studies because we travel so much. He feels like he can't waste 3 hours just driving. So he studies and I drive. And he wants quietness. He doesn't want me listening to the radio or anything during that time. I can waste 3 hours, see? But I had complained about that. And he bought, you know what he bought me for Christmas? A Sony Walkman. So I just plugged the little earplugs in, phones to my ear, and I just listened to tapes all the way down the highway, all across North Texas. And I was listening to a tape today, and I liked, I liked everything I heard, but one thing he said, this speaker was saying, when God created man and woman, he created us equal. A few years ago, it wasn't thought that. We thought that the man was the superior, but he created us different. We are equal in value, but we're just different in function. I liked that. I just equal in value, but different in function. And I'm glad because I pick up all the waste baskets in our house from the bedrooms and the bathroom, and I bring them to one central location, and I'm glad that my husband takes them from the house out to the alley. Now, grant you, if I didn't put them in the doorway where he had to walk over them to get to the car, he might not ever remember. They didn't have a thing to do with this lesson tonight. In the role that you're in as the wife of a leader in a church, you are in relationships. This is an age of human relationships. It just seems like if you're just whatever you are doing, you're in a relationship with someone in your home, with your neighbor, in the church, ladies on the board, a relationship with your husband. And sometimes these relationships just seem unmanageable. You just don't know what you're going to do in it, or they're intolerable. You think, I can't stand this one more day. And sure enough, until we can get our eyes off of ourselves and get them on God, sometimes these relationships are unmanageable. But I believe that there is a place where we can turn to the Lord, and whatever relationship we're in, it can be managed. And I think that nothing has hindered the work of the church down through the ages more than two people in a relationship and not being able to handle it properly. Not allowing the denial of self and the letting God rule you. Sometimes this indifference that we have to one another is cruel. Oftentimes it's just lovelessness. Sometimes, though, it results in a person being lonely, and that loneliness sometimes turns to hostility and oftentimes rebellion, and even we see that rebellion turn to criminal acts. A person can just start out being lonely, get rebellious, get mean, and then lose out with the Lord. And a person can be lonely when they're in a crowd. I remember a few years ago, we have three sons, and they all attended Southwestern. We live in Waxahachie. And from time to time, our house would just be a Grand Central Station. A lot of kids there. I remember one weekend after school was out on Friday, and they had to be out of the dorms Saturday. A lot of times they just don't want to go home. They don't want to say goodbye to their friends. And that weekend, on that Sunday night, nine kids slept at my house. My son knew where the linen closet was, and he got them a sheet. And, you know, teenagers, they don't have to have, just give them a pillow on the floor, and that's all they need. But one time there were a group of boys at our house, a group of kids, and my mother lives with me from December to Easter every year, and she happened to be there at that time, and she looked over at this young man who was not joining in with whatever they were doing that night, and she just moved over near him and began to talk to him, and he just opened up to her and told her he was so lonely. And she said, well, you're here. These kids are having a lot of fun. He said, yes, I was invited, but I still don't feel a part. And that's one thing that we as a group of ladies here tonight, we want to go home and in our church, look around to that person that's in the crowd, but they're lonely. They don't feel like they are a part. Now, I am very aware that some people, you can't pull them in. They won't let you make them be a part. But do your best anyway. If you remember a few years ago, the women's ministry theme was overflow with love. And the scripture they used was from 1 Thessalonians 3:12. May the Lord make your love increase and overflow for each other and for everyone else, just as ours does for you. And I want that to be in our thoughts tonight as we're talking from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. May the love of God just increase in our life so that it overflows to every person that we are in a relationship with. I remember reading a story of a young girl named Gina who was from a home like so many homes are today, broken home. And at age 12, Gina started glue sniffing. Before long, she was drinking. Before long, she was smoking marijuana. And then she started shooting heroin in her arm. Gina turned off lectures. You couldn't talk to her. She wouldn't listen to a sermon. But one day, a group of people from a church made Gina a part of their circle. They welcomed her into their as a friend. And it was after Gina felt the love of this church group that she began to listen to what they were telling her. And that's the way a lot of people that we're going to meet today are. They're not going to listen to you tell them about God's love until they felt God's love through you. And the quickest way to get an entrance into the hearts of someone is to show love first. Become a friend. You know, it wouldn't hurt us ladies, we Assembly of God ladies, it wouldn't hurt us to be a friend to the Catholic lady down the street. It won't hurt for her to come to your house. They need to feel God's love through us, and then we can tell them about God's love. Another verse from 1 Corinthians 14:1 reads, follow after love. Love isn't easy. Some people it's hard to love or show love to. But let's remember that persons are to be loved and things are to be used. Oftentimes we see that reversed. We see people being used and things being loved. Love survives all of life's hazards except neglect. You have to keep working at love and following love. You see, if you neglect the love of your husband and he neglects his love for you, then suddenly you're just two people with the same name living under the same roof, but nothing is there. Love can't be neglected. Are you all getting too warm now? I knew that. Can you help us? Okay. I think this one is the heat, I believe. Okay. Their heating and air conditioning works well, doesn't it? Praise the Lord. Let me make a suggestion to you now that I'm going to start on the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. I read where Dr. Charles Allen from Houston, pastor of the First Methodist Church in Houston, a number of years ago, gathered together 31 different translations of the New Testament And from those 31 different translations, he recorded this 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. He printed those in a little book, 31 different translations, and he passed it out to his membership. And he asked them each day for a month to read the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians and pray each day that the Lord would make that alive in their life. And at the end of 31 days, then he began to receive testimonies, and they were wonderful testimonies of changes that had been made in the lives of his membership after they had let these words come be in their heart for 31 days. Let's just look at them verse by verse. Verse 1, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. Love is greater than the ability to speak well. Verse number 2, and though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I would remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. You think, well, what marvelous gifts those are. Prophecy, understanding, knowledge, and faith. But love is greater. You see, love is feet added to facts. And that's the action that we see. Teaching God's love in Sunday school is good, but it's not enough. We've got to love those students that we're giving the message to. And good deeds are not enough in themselves, because look at verse 3. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, it profiteth me nothing if I have not loved. The motive of our deeds determines the value they are. You can give a dinner to the hungry, or you can give a donation to the underprivileged, or you can put a coin in the tin cup of the man sitting on the street. And all of these may help the receiver, but they're not going to do you any good if you didn't give them in love. How about, rather than a handout, why don't you invite some less fortunate person than you to your home? Now, this is getting down to the practical, ladies, of what you can do when you get back to your local church. Ask someone to your home for dinner that you know very well could never return that invitation and invite you to their home. And I think that's showing love. In fact, next Sunday when you go to church, don't sit in the same place you normally sit with your very best friend. Look around and see someone that you think might be that lonely person and sit with them that day. And preacher's wives, the next time you go to district council, don't just spend all your time with those couples you're so comfortable with. Look around to a preacher and his wife who has no friends and pull them in and make them a part of your circle. That's showing love. Because in our life, love, or life minus love, just equals nothing. And you say, well, what is love like? Verse 4 tells us, love suffers long and is kind. Love suffers long. Love can just about put up with anything. It suffers long. Let me ask you, how willing are you to put the desires of someone else above your own? In your home, are you willing to put your husband's desires above your own? In the church, are you ready to let Sister So-and-so's desires be more dominant than your own? Do we go out of our way to be cooperative and try to get along with others? Let me read you a little prayer that I found the other day. Lord, teach me to correct without crushing. This is suffering, love suffering long. Help me to correct without crushing. Help me to listen without laughing. Help me to help without hanging on. Help me to surround without smothering. Help me to love without limit the way you love me. Now let me read it again. Lord, teach me to correct without crushing. Think of those people in your home or under your direction that you have to correct. Can you correct them without humiliating them? Without pushing them down and making them feel so bad about themselves? Can you correct without crushing? Can you help without hanging on? You know, sometimes people want to help, but they want to tell you what to do with the help they're giving you. Have you ever had anyone give you money and feel like that you were in their debt forever? They didn't really give it to you, did they? Help me to listen without laughing. And I tell you, if you have children, this one is a very important one. Listen without laughing. And to surround without smothering, and love without limit. You recall the scripture in the Bible when Jesus came to the woman at the well. He didn't condemn her for her evil life. He didn't rebuke her for her past. Do you remember what he did? He asked her for a drink of water. He allowed her to be of service to him. He allowed her to feel a sense of worth and to maintain some dignity. And that's what we need to do with the people that we're in relationships with that are down. We need to work with them in a way that they do not feel crushed, they do not feel condemned or judged. We're just there reaching out with God's love to them. In dealing with people, don't push them into a corner and humiliate them. I tell you, if you have teenagers and you start pushing them into a corner or issuing ultimatums, they'll try you on it, won't they? I read this story of two mountain goats who approached one another on a narrow ledge, and realizing that there was no room to pass, they reared and they bucked, but neither one of them budged. And they backed up and they charged and locked horns again, but neither one of them, they each held their ground. They wouldn't let either one go by. They did that several times, and finally a sensible one of the two knelt down and let the other one climb over him, and they went merrily on their way. The conflict was solved by one being willing to stoop. Ladies, a lot of times conflicts in our church could be solved or never begun if we would be willing to just stoop a little and let the other person go on their way. Let the other person have the last word. Be self-assured that you don't always have to have your way. Can you do that when you're together in a group and something is being discussed? Can you allow the Lord to help you not say anything? You know, we pray sometimes that, Lord, help me know what to say. We need to pray, Lord, help me know when not to say. Not to say anything. Love is kind. The scripture says love suffers long and is kind. I read a story of showing that kindness really pays when you are not even expecting it. The story goes of one day a man in tattered clothes walked with a bunch of papers in a paper sack, walked into a lawyer's office. This was a large firm. Several lawyers were on the staff, and they were all called in when this man came in. And he talked with them all for a while. He left. A year passed, and one day a limousine drove up in front of this law firm. A chauffeured our uniformed chauffeur got out, opened the back door, and a man in a fine suit stepped out with an expensive briefcase, and he walked into the law firm, and he asked specifically for one lawyer. It happened to be the junior lawyer on the firm, the youngest man, and the old gentleman opened his briefcase and presented this young lawyer with a portfolio of business to take care of that the retainer itself was more than the young man had ever made. They discussed their business, and when the old man started to leave, the young lawyer said, "Sir, I just want to know. I know you were here a year ago anticipating that you would have this business." And he said, "Now you're back here today. I want to know why you asked for me to take care of your business." And the old man looked up and he said, "Son, a year ago when I came here in old clothes, you were the lawyer. You were the one that took my coat and hung it up." Now, ladies, I don't think that really happened. Can you hear a story like that and know, believe that didn't really happen? But it does get a point, I think. What we do to the least is going to be repaid to us. And a lot of times this reward's not going to come in this earth. We're not going to see it. But anything that you do in your local church for that person that's a little more underprivileged than the other, and you do it just out of courtesy and out of kindness, expecting nothing in return, you may not reap a dividend on this earth, but know for sure that it's being put to your account in heaven. Love doesn't envy. The scripture says love envies not. William Shakespeare said envy is the green sickness. Envy is discontentment at the good fortune of others. Discontentment at the good fortune of others. In contrast, love will rejoice when others excel. Now, can you think of a time, don't raise your hand, can you think of a time when you felt just a little bit envious when someone, another family in the church got a new car and you weren't able to buy one? Or someone else moved into a new home and you all were still struggling with your payments? Or pastor's wife, you remember when the deacon's son was elected class president and you thought your son should have been elected class president? That's all, from the human standpoint, that's the way we are. But love, God's love, when we let it be so full in our lives, God's love will allow us to honestly, genuinely, and sincerely rejoice when others excel. And if you're having trouble rejoicing when someone else excels, then you need to pray, "Lord, increase my love. Increase my love." Love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. Divine love doesn't parade for the applause of people. You're not doing what you're doing, ladies, for a popularity contest. Remember that we're in this because we're wanting to please God. In one of Aesop's fables, we read where a fly sat on the axle wheel of the chariot as it was going across the country and looked back at all the dust and said, "Oh, what a dust do I make." You know, that's the way sometimes we get this exaggerated opinion of how important we are. And we're just the fly on the axle of the chariot. But we think we're the one stirring up all the dust. Allow God's love to be so big in your life that you don't get an exaggerated opinion of your importance. And conversely, have enough of God's love in your heart that you don't think that you're worth nothing. know that you are of value. Love is not big-headed. Love is big-hearted. How does love act? Verse 5 tells us, love does not behave itself unseemly. Love doesn't behave itself unseemly. You just, in whatever situation you're in, because you're so full of God's love, you can act right. Think about it the next time you're in your car driving down the street in traffic and the person in front of you is not going fast enough, or you get to a stoplight and the person in front of you, the light turns green and they don't move immediately, and you're tempted to honk and they turn around and it's your neighbor. Isn't that embarrassing? Do you know what? Love will help you to behave so that your behavior will never be an embarrassment to you. In strangers or in among church people or wherever, I remember so well. James and I learned so many lessons from Brother and Sister Anderson, the former superintendents of our district. One we learned from Brother Anderson, we went out to eat together a lot of times, and you know, if you've gone out to eat, you're going to someday get a waitress who hasn't had a good day, and she's not going to give you the best service. We never saw Brother Anderson get upset at the worst possible service you could receive. If someone else in the crowd wanted to chide the waitress a little bit, he said, no, wait just a minute. You don't know what she's been through today. You don't know what the last customers put her through. And let's just be quiet. You know, if she hadn't brought us water and we'd been there 15 minutes or so on. And he would, when she did get to our table, he'd just be so kind to her. You would never catch Brother Anderson behaving unseemly, because he wasn't getting the service he was paying for. And I think that's what we have to keep in mind. Is God's love so evident in my life that I won't behave wrong even when I'm in a crowd where no one knows me? You see, I have a little poem that fits this. It's the little things we do and the minor words we say that make or break the beauty of the average passing day. It's the little things we do and the minor words we say that make or break the beauty of the average passing day. Love seeketh not its own. Love doesn't push itself in the limelight. Love doesn't strive for place or position. It is so wonderful in a local church when through the sovereign will of God, a body of people elect your husband as a board member, when that's the last thing he really wanted. You know, he is, it's that person who is striving to be in that position because I want to get in control, that sometimes they're in their own desire to be in a position, they leave the will of God out. But love, when you're truly motivated by God's love, you're not going to strive for position. When you're elected, you're going to not think of this as a position, but you're going to think of this as another place to serve. Are you willing to do something and let someone else get the credit for it? Let me say this, when you're selfishly looking out for your own interest, you only have one person working for you. But when you help a dozen other people unselfishly, then you have a dozen people working for you. just think of in the group that you're in. Do you walk up to other people and do you inquire about their family, and do you listen to them tell about their grandchildren? Do you even remember they have a boy and a girl, or do you want them to just give you their undivided attention and listen to you talk about your grandchildren? That's seeking not your own. Don't just be completely interested in yourself and your own, but interested in other people and the things that are important to them. Love is not easily provoked. Now, irritability is a product of the time, of the age. I tell you what, we're under a lot more pressure and we have a lot more stresses today than our grandparents did. They had some that were different than ours today, but they didn't live quite the hectic schedule that we live. And you know, I think the toughest place to demonstrate patience is in the home, in your own home. You know, we're often more polite to a total stranger than we are to that person we love the dearest. And you can teach a Sunday school class, ladies, and be so polite to those children in your Sunday school class and be so snappy with your own at home. Let's allow God's love to be so full in our life that His love can help us be not easily provoked. I taught school 16 years and taught high school, and I remember one year some of my students met our sons, and I think I had a group to our home, and they said, "Oh, we just love your mother. She is so patient." And a few days later, something came up in our house, and I was getting pretty snappy at the boys. And one of my smart aleck boys, he said, hey, let's call in that patient teacher to be our mother. You see, the test of our spirituality is not just measured in Sunday morning worship, but at home, when the kids kick their pajamas under the bed, or they carefully hang up their coat on the floor. Have you ever had that? Love is not easily provoked. I read an illustration. It's one of these two that I doubt very seriously really happened. But a little boy came home from school one day. The mother was in the kitchen preparing the evening meal. When he came through the front door, he slammed it. She heard the door slam. And before long, he was in the kitchen demanding to know what's for supper tonight. And she was just a little bit taken aback at his tone and looked at him. And he marched right over to the refrigerator and opened the door, reached in and took the bottle of water and just drank from the bottle. And they never allowed that. They were to get a glass to drink their water. And further, she had a congealed salad ready for dinner that evening, and he just stuck his finger in it and took a bite. Well, by then, every one of us would have been ready to grab the wooden spoon after him. Did you ever use a wooden spoon on your kids? I didn't. My granddaughter's using a wooden spoon on my grandson. It's killing my soul. I use worse than that. I really think the wooden spoon is less. But instead of this mother getting provoked and storming out at the child and sending him away, maybe without his supper or paddling him, she just went over and put her arms around him. And she said, "Tell me about your day." And he just broke down in tears. Everything had gone wrong that day. When he started to get on the bus that morning, he tripped and just spilled all of his books. And his pencils went one way and his books went another way. And the bus driver was wanting to close the door. And you can imagine, you can visualize how embarrassed a child is when they trip and spill everything. And then he got to school,
and he failed his spelling test. And I've added this little part to the story. The reason he failed his spelling test was because his mother was too busy the night before to help him with his spelling. That's so if you have children at your home, you'll help them get their homework. Make a time for them to get their homework. Help them with it. And then, to add to all of that, he went out at recess, and he was throwing a ball, and his friend ran into the path of the ball. He wasn't even throwing it toward the child, but he ran and was hit. And he blamed the little boy for hitting him with the ball. Now, that's just too much for one little boy to put up with all day long, so he came home angry. And he showed that anger through all of this drinking from the water and sticking his finger in the jello. And instead of the mother adding impatience, she loved him. And then they had a nice evening. Now, when I tell this story, I tell you, ladies, that's the ideal way that stories like that turn out. Everything turns out well. A lot of times, I'm not telling you, if your son comes home and he's doing all these mean things and you put your arms around him and you're loving, I'm not going to promise you that it won't ever, ever happen again, that he won't ever come home ugly like that again. Because, see, they haven't read this story or heard this story. But I can reasonably be assured that it's going to turn out better if you can handle some situations with love instead of impatience. You know that I know there's times when you have to spank, you have to punish. But I think a lot of times handling your anger, keeping it under control, will be the better solution. And that's not just true in the home. That's true in church. That's true in a business meeting. Don't feel like that you have to just speak out your opinion. Let God's love allow you to be kind and patient and not easily provoked. You see, all of us have dynamite within us. And whenever we walk without God or without the power of His love, we might explode. But with God's love, then the fuse is a lot longer and it's not so easily exploded. And the secret of handling your temper is not just self-control. There has to be some self-control, but it's Christ's control. And I don't know how many of you have heard me give this illustration, but there is certain value in self-control too, ladies. Let me just give you this example. You're at home one day and the children have been misbehaving and you have told them three times to quit fighting. You've told them to pick up their toys and your voice has gotten more declamated and more declamated, and suddenly you're just saying, if you kids don't behave, and you're loud and the telephone rings and you go over and you answer it and you say, hello. That's self-control. See, you let yourself be angry and out of control with them, but here to this person on the other end, hello, you've controlled yourself. Self-control is a part of it, but Christ's control, Christ's love in your heart will help you use your self-control. Love thinks no evil. Love is optimistic. It looks at people in the best light. Instead of seeing faults, it sees possibilities in the other person. Do you know that we accuse according to our imaginations? Most accusations are things that we've imagined about people. We don't know they're true. We just think they are. And so we accuse. I read just recently in the Pentecostal Evangel where this man in his article, he said he would rather trust someone and be disappointed than to accuse them and be wrong. You see, because he could trust someone and be disappointed, he could handle his disappointment. But if he accused them and wrong, it would be harder to handle his guilt of a false accusation. I remember when our three boys were teenagers, a man in our church who had had three boys told my husband one day, he said, "Brother Bridges, let me tell you, trust those boys when you really don't feel like they deserve your trust." Let's allow God's love to be so evident in our lives that we can trust people. If they disappoint us, then they have to answer to God. But let's never be guilty of falsely accusing. It's much better to trust than to be a false accuser. Henry Ward Beecher said, "Keep a good-sized cemetery in your backyard in which to bury the faults of your friends." Many times, instead of burying them, we loudly proclaim them. And John Greenleaf Whittaker said, "Search thine own heart, what paineth thee and others in thyself may be." Do you know what you don't like in someone else may be your own worst fault? Verse 6, "Love rejoices not in iniquity, but someone else's failure." Am I doing it to make myself look good? You know, if I was just speaking to preachers wise, I'd tell them, when you go to a new church, beware of that church member who tries to build you up by talking about the former pastor, because it won't be long before they'll be talking about you. And the same is true with friends or with ladies in the church. Beware of the person that talks to you about someone else, because when they're away from you, they're going to talk about you. Do you know, the gossiper or the slanderer is worse than the biggest thief in the world, because see, a thief steals things, but the gossiper or the slanderer steals a man's reputation. And you know, there are a lot of things that we question about what is God's will in our lives regarding this. A lot of things that we come up with that maybe we don't find a clear-cut answer in the Bible. It doesn't tell us, "Thou shalt not do this." But ladies, we don't have any question of knowing what God's will is about gossiping. It is sin to gossip. And you know, isn't it sad that it's so prevalent in our churches? And it's done by Christians. But you know what? We're deceived. We think what we're saying isn't gossip. We think sometimes we're giving it as a prayer request. Have you ever had someone call and say, "I want you to pray for Sister so-and-so," and then she starts telling you all the dirt about this person? Don't be deceived into listening to gossip, even when it's given to you as a prayer request. Say, "I don't need to know all the details. I can pray for her without knowing the details." And if someone is just adamant they're going to talk about someone else to you, just say, "Wait a minute, it isn't fair for us to talk about her and her not be present. Let's call her and ask her to come over. We won't talk long." Just remember this. Love bears all things. Don't be a gossiper. Don't tell tales. And another thing, love bearing things. Are you willing, ladies, to let your husbands attend a board meeting and come home and you not give him the ninth degree over what happened at the board meeting? You know, this is just real practical. But I think this group of ladies here, we need to think about this. We as ladies, we are certainly very interested in what is happening in the church. But if we can release our husbands to God to take care of the business of the church, if we would pray and just release him to God, they'll do a lot better job than we think they would. And I tell preachers' wives this too. Don't expect your husbands to come home from a trying board member and just go over it detail by detail what happened, telling you. They really need a complete diversion when they get home. Let them do something else. And then, if they want to talk to you about it, they can. And another thing, when they do come home and something is told to you, be sure that you do not repeat it. Can you allow God's love to be so strong in your life that you, your husband can tell you something and you don't have to repeat it? The control of the tongue is a barometer of Christian maturity. Love believes all things, hopeth all things. Love searches for what is good and gives benefit of the doubt. Hope and great expectations are opposites of despair and gloom. Let's let our lives be full with hope and expectation. The psalmist said, I will bless the Lord at all times, and his praise shall continually be in my mouth. David wrote that, and you think, well, David didn't know what I'm going through. But he didn't live a sheltered life. Think back what all happened. Saul hated him. Absalom, his son, rebelled against him and his baby died. But still, he said, I'm going to bless the Lord. And love endures all things. Through the good times and the bad times, through sad days or glad days, through doubt or darkness, love endures. Love is not a feeling. Love is a commitment. And when we leave this meeting tonight and you go home, you're going to have to commit yourself to allow God's love to be uppermost in your life. When I met James 34 years ago, I liked him. And when one day I liked him so much that I committed myself to love him, I really don't think I fell helplessly in love with him. I chose to love him. I think that love is a commitment that we choose to make. And I'll love James as long as I choose to. When I quit loving him, it's going to be a choice I make to quit. I will not fall out of love with him beyond my control. If I ever don't love him, it's because I've made myself not love him. That's the way I feel. Love will endure all things. Love is the cheerful frame of mind that enables a tea kettle to sing when in hot water up to its neck. Love never fails. In reality, just about everything in this life will fail. Fame fails, businesses fail, friends fail. You read in the Bible, Thomas failed, Peter failed, but in their failure, isn't it wonderful that God's love didn't fail toward them? And in their, when they were forgiven, they were forgiven. Today, in the 20th century, we will fail, but Jesus will never fail. His love is eternal and it reaches out to us, and when we fail, he forgives. We can view in our mind tonight the tallest building made of concrete, steel. Someday that steel and concrete is going to crumble. It won't last forever. But the scripture says, a cup of cold water given in my name will last for eternity. Remember that when you go from here, what you do in the name of Christ will have eternal value. What you do to help your husband and your church has eternal value. Let it be for good. When we die, when we're nearing death, let's not say, I didn't love enough. Let's let it be said, I loved with all I had every day of my life to every person I came in contact with. I loved. Let's let the love of God increase in our life and just overflow wherever we are and whatever we're doing. God bless you.